9:08 now, and we are really kicking off the holiday season, if you will. Thanksgiving, a little bit late, I think as late as it can be this year in November, Monday, November 25th, which means a shorter holiday season. And we thought we'd take advantage of the time to have Thomas Farley on with us, our friend, Mr. Manners, an etiquette expert and columnist. Take your questions. Make sure nobody's feelings get hurt intentionally or unintentionally this holiday season. You can text your questions in to 504-260-1870, and I'll pass them along. How you doing, Thomas?
Hi, Tommy. Good to speak with you. And, yes, it is a shorter season this year for sure. So we've got to brush up on our manners while we can.
How does one become Mr. Manners, an etiquette expert and a columnist?
It has been a fun journey. I was an editor at Town & Country magazine for about a decade, where I helmed a column called Social Graces. And that book became that column became an anthology. And when the anthology came out, the attention really kind of began to focus in on, gosh, what are we doing as a culture? Who are we as a people? How can we treat one another more nicely? So I left the magazine and dedicated my career to helping others do just that.
Well, let's talk about if somebody's hosting Thanksgiving or a holiday celebration, it would seem to me it has to begin with who do you invite and how do you take everybody else's feelings into consideration? It's your home, it's your gathering, but you don't want to have people there that are at loggerheads or going to argue. How do you determine all that, Thomas?
You know, the really nice thing about Thanksgiving, I believe, is that it is a come one, come all holiday. So we have an obligation if we know there are people who are neighbors or family members who would otherwise be alone on the holiday and they live relatively nearby, to extend an invitation to include them. And I think that's a great thing to do. Gathering people, it's not just strictly only one side of the family or that you're having a Friendsgiving only, but that you really open up your home, if you're capable of doing so, to people who will break bread, share good times with one another, a little bit of merriment. And as a host, you do really have the obligation to set the ground rules. So, for example, if you know that you've got some real political animals in your family who constantly lock horns, and this year, of course, the presidential election is just very fresh in everyone's minds. If you know that that is going to be an inevitability, I would put that out there in the invite that you want this to remain a politics-free gathering and that you would expect that people do not discuss politics out of respect to you as hosts. So that helps set the ground rules. And what I think that also allays some fears, that all the studies just continue to show the number of people who avoid and skip Thanksgiving attendance entirely because they don't want to get into these political conversations. So I believe the conversations can be had respectfully amongst two individuals who really want to learn and listen, but unfortunately that's not usually the case, and so therefore I think it's important to set down some of those rules.
Well, here's a text that pops up that's pretty interesting. It says, years ago I invited an African-American couple with whom I worked to my home for Thanksgiving dinner, and I was shocked at the racism that my family exhibited, overt, and that it just made everybody uncomfortable. That was eye-opening, boy, in a lot of different ways for that family, I guess. Tell me your thoughts on that, Thomas.
Yeah, I think, racism, of course, is just completely unacceptable, and that goes beyond the realm of what good manners is, which is just making everyone feel welcome and accepted and a better version of themselves. So when you verge into something like racism, well, that's beyond my purview. Unfortunately, I do not condone it. I think it's awful. But I love the fact that they had the instinct to include that couple. I'm sorry that was their experience, and hopefully they all learned something, and maybe now they're better versions of themselves. I don't know.
So do you vet people beforehand? Because let me give you this example. We would all like maybe on Thanksgiving to invite the neighbor down the street who maybe lives alone, or the maybe even some people that are homeless to your home to celebrate. But there are people that are part of your regular group that maybe don't want to be exposed to that. So how do you balance all that?
The sense of entitlement that a guest who's a guest in your home feels that they can dictate who you should and should not include in your conversation it's upsetting, I think. You were there at someone's request. You've been invited because the host either feels obligated to invite you, although they don't have to, or they simply feel that you would add to the occasion. And if you are bringing a grudge, if you are bringing negative energy to the gathering, I think that's really inappropriate, and you're being the worst form of guest. So you, as a guest, it is not your role to be questioning the guest list of a host. And you know what? If you don't like it, host your own gathering, and then you can put together your own guest list. But if you're a guest there, you come with an open mind, willing to interact with, mingle, and accept everyone who is there, strangers and non-strangers alike.
Yeah. What is the obligation that you have as a guest when you go to somebody's home? Because, you know, first of all, take me from that, Thomas. Do you bring something? Should you bring a bottle of wine? Do you bring a gift? What do you do? And then in terms of conducting yourself, I guess you want to talk. You don't want to monopolize the conversation. Take me through being the ideal guest for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, be grateful that you're not the one who has to do all the cooking, because Thanksgiving is a Herculean task, as anyone who's ever thrown a Thanksgiving gathering knows. So as an invited guest, even starting, Tommy, before you arrive, you're going to make sure you RSVP, and you RSVP as quickly as you can. And this goes for any party, not just Thanksgiving. But if you've been invited to a gathering, don't wait until the last minute, or don't just show up not having RSVP'd at all. So yes, you want to get your RSVP in as soon as you possibly can. You, in that RSVP, I'd indicate any allergies, any food restrictions that you might have, not in a demanding way, but just as a kind of a heads up way. And then follow that up with, I'd love to be able to bring something that both accommodates my allergy requirements, but also to share with others. And especially in the spirit of Thanksgiving, I think that's a wonderful thing to do. So you're before you even arrive, you've inquired about the dietary restrictions. You should know what time you have to arrive, and is there a dress code? So you're really fully prepared when you walk through that door. And when you walk through that door, you're going to bring whatever item you've brought to share, but also some sort of a gift for the host or hostess to enjoy. This is your thank you to them for having the gathering. And then, of course, once you're there, yes, you're absolutely right. You don't just retire to the den and flip on the TV and watch a football game for the balance of the day. You are there to you record the game and you watch it later. You are there to mingle, to uplift the gathering by your very presence, rather than be a damp blanket who spoke to no one or spoke to the one person that you like and ignored everyone else.
You don't want to, buttonhole people either, right? It's not Congress. You don't want to get them in a corner and not let them leave. But then again, you don't want to be buttonholed and you want to leave too. So how do you know when the conversation has gone on long enough, it's time to move on to somebody else?
So typically, a Thanksgiving gathering, you're not talking about, unless you're at some sort of an event. If you're a guest in someone's home, you may initiate a conversation that runs its course, but chances are in an hour or so, you're going to be back speaking with that same person again. So you're not going to use the usual lines of, it's been so nice speaking with you, or, I'm glad we had to catch up. I had the chance to catch up. I hope to see you again sometime soon. Those lines obviously make no sense in the way that they would if you were at, say, a large networking gathering. But the general rule for conversations is that after about 10 minutes, unless you're really engrossed in an important conversation that clearly both are enjoying and both are contributing to, it's time to check in on the host, see if they need any help. Maybe you can pass some hors d'oeuvres, pass some drinks, and start mingling with others. But if it's a really small gathering, if it's five of you, well, you're going to be spending a whole lot of time speaking with each one of those five individuals in 10 minutes. Wouldn't even begin to cut it at an event that's most likely going to last for several hours.
Is there an ideal number of people to invite? Because I guess if you got, you don't want to put an ad out in a paper, but if you got five people, I guess it could be a pretty intimate gathering. And how do you temper expectations before you launch all of this?
So, Tommy, as you know, I live in New York City, and so therefore I really am, I'm almost off the hook for ever hosting in a one-bedroom New York apartment from ever hosting a Thanksgiving gathering, much to my relief. But of course, a lot depends on the size of your home. And I think if you're in a family of any substantial size, therefore, this normally falls on the person who has the largest home. So I think that's really, that's where it starts, who has the largest space to accommodate. And you know what, if you all just have small spaces, well, you are going to be forced physically, you're constrained to keep the gathering somewhat smaller. So I think, you know, Thanksgiving can be two people, or maybe it's your, you know, if it's just a small family, you know, two spouses and a child. Maybe they decide they want to go out to a restaurant for Thanksgiving, and that's totally fine. But I, you know, I believe if you have the space and you have the family or the extended network, the more the merrier. 15, 20 people at Thanksgiving, I think could be a great time.
Somebody texted in and said, my brother-in-law thinks that my family is dull and feels as though he has to be the life of the party. So he monopolizes every conversation. What would you say to both parties involved here?
Yeah, well, you know, this may be a one-sided perception. He may think he's the life of the party, and maybe he is, but maybe he's not. I think
if you don't think you're the life of the party, get a couple of drinks in you. You'd be surprised how funny you get, right?
Yeah, so you're to yourself
to
at
yourself,
least.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, I do think as a host, you think about if you have this option, you think about how you curate your invitation list. So you don't certainly want to invite 15 wallflowers who are just going to be staring down at their ice cubes in their drinks and not saying a word. That's certainly not a lovely gathering. So I think about, you know, have I invited a nice mix of listeners, of people who travel, of people who are funny? You may not have that option at Thanksgiving where it's kind of tradition is going to dictate that certainly if you're hosting a big Thanksgiving family dinner, there are family members that you must invite by tradition. But I, as a host, you really do want to think about that mix. So it might be that if your family tends to be a little bit on the quieter side and, you know, it feels a little bit awkward or uncomfortable, maybe there are a couple of friends who live down the block who aren't doing anything for Thanksgiving who are more talkative or might inject some new life or excitement into the gathering. And I think that's a wonderful thing. But if you find yourself just doing 99% of the talking and no one can get a word in edgewise and but want to get in a word edgewise, then I think it's time to slow down and let others do some talking.
Somebody texted in, said they want to blend their family with their coworkers for Thanksgiving this year. Unfortunately, one is way to the left and one is way to the right. How do they make that go by peacefully?
Yeah,
first thing I'd
so,
say is lock the guns
don't...
up. That's what I would say.
Oh, gosh, please, yes. Yeah. You know, I don't think that's necessarily a recipe for disaster. I would say that my guess would be family members have probably not met your coworkers before. Maybe your immediate family has, but certainly your uncles and your cousins, you know, nephews have probably not met your coworkers. So if you're meeting someone for the very first time, I think politics is a very dicey proposition in general. But for people that you've never met before to be engaging in a political conversation, you're really going down a very risky path. If, on the other hand, you know that you have a, you know, say a cousin and you know your opposites, but you really do learn and enjoy having a little bit of a political banter back and forth, I'm fine with that as long as you're not holding the rest of the party captive when you do so. So don't do it at the dinner table. If the host has the option, I suggest I call this the caucus room. Set aside a room in the house where your political animals can go, have a respectful conversation, and then come back into the main room when they're done. You know, this is discussing politics is how we learn about others' views, and I think that's important, especially as polarized as we are. But for the coworkers coming to a gathering with friends and you know they're diametric opposites, if that's something you're worried about, I would default to that strategy I mentioned earlier where I'd simply say out of respect to all sensibilities, we're going to keep this a politics-free gathering. You might also, as a means of having everyone get to know one another, do some party games that will keep people distracted and that have nothing to do with politics. And this is a great way for people to get to know one another.
Somebody texted in, you can answer this when we come back. They had a family gathering last year, didn't end so well. and they're wondering how to disinvite the troublemaker. You can address that when we come back. We're talking to Thomas Farley, Mr. Manners etiquette expert and columnist. The holidays are here, folks. We're trying to help you out with some etiquette and get everybody getting along and avoiding trouble and making sure your holiday gathering and holiday season, we'll talk about shopping and gift etiquette and so forth, is where it's supposed to be. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. All right, 9:29 tomorrow at 8:15. Jordan Figo back after vacation. Tim, by the way, did an outstanding job last week. Look for a little something extra in your pay envelope this week, and by that I mean a paperclip. Jordan's back on the job, and he tells me Jason Williams is going to join us tomorrow morning at 8:15. District attorney, so we'll talk with him then. Right now we're talking to Mr. Manners. Make sure I get that time right. Yep, 8:15. Mr. Manners, Thomas Farley, an etiquette expert and columnist. Tell me about, what is it, MrManners.com, Thomas?
Yes, Mr. is spelled out, -manners.com, and there you'll find my TV appearances. I also, Tommy, and I know we've discussed this in the past, but I do programs for companies because we're talking a lot today about families, but these very same issues of poor communication, arguments, they happen in corporations too. So I travel the country working with companies of just about every stripe, helping their team members deliver better customer service, communicate better, get along better, and succeed.
Not to mention holiday parties, which we'll get to, but somebody texted in and said they had a family gathering last year. One person ruined it. They're hosting again. They're trying to gracefully disinvite this person. What do you tell them?
Yeah, so here we are. It's the Monday before Thanksgiving, and so those invites, those Thanksgiving invites, should have gone out several weeks ago for anyone hosting a gathering. If you've decided that you, when they say disinvite, I presume what they mean is not that they've invited them this year and now they've changed their mind, but rather.
I think what they're saying is they presume the person's presuming that they're invited and they want to let them know that they're not.
Yeah. So I think, ideally, and this is Monday morning quarterbacking on this, but ideally I would have had a word with these individuals last year about whatever it was that went down at the gathering that the host found so offensive, and not wait a year when tensions are high, stress is high, suddenly to be finding out days before a gathering you think you are going to be a VIP guest at, to only to learn that you not only are not invited and now you have no place to go for Thanksgiving. So I think that's, unfortunately, I think it sounds like the host perhaps avoided that conversation at the time it should have happened. But given the fact that this is the reality now, I do think that they should place that call and just be very clear about what happened and why they feel the way they do. And, if it really was that offensive and not just some minor thing that the host is fixating on, then it's certainly their prerogative to decide that these guests are not welcome. But they have to remember, they may be burning a bridge. That relationship may never recover from this decision. So I'd make sure that they are 100% certain this is the way they want to proceed, especially if it's a family member.
And based on that question, another one pops up and says, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I'm expected to be somewhere, and I don't want to go.
Yeah, well, anytime you are invited to a gathering, whether it's a work gathering, whether it's a family gathering or friends gathering, you are not obligated to be there. You also don't need, people think they need to come up with all sorts of elaborate excuses and lies and, which then become uncovered and now it's even worse. If you really don't want to go for whatever the reason, you don't have to justify your non-attendance. I would simply say, I'd love to join. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to make it this year. And if you've been a regular guest at this gathering and for whatever reason just need to sit this one out, you don't need to give a reason why. You just simply say you won't be able to join. And I would perhaps, as a nice gesture, you send some kind of a flower arrangement in advance. I wish we could be there to celebrate with you this year. Looking forward to seeing you soon. And that's it.
That's simple.
I know it probably sounds simpler than it is in reality, but people kind of they do somersaults and backflips trying to come up with reasons why they are not going to go somewhere when the real reason is that either they're too tired. The other thing that happens at this time of year, Tommy, is people are stressed out. They're invited. If we're fortunate to have a nice circle of friends, you're invited to a lot of things. And that's when this holiday stress settles in and we feel like we have to say yes to everything because we don't want to disappoint anyone. And that's not good either for anyone's mental health or wellness. So if you're just feeling tapped out, I think it's entirely okay to decline an invite. Don't feel you have to say yes to absolutely everything.
This is an interesting text. Is there an ideal time to serve Thanksgiving dinner? I can never remember going anywhere for Thanksgiving where they said we're going to eat at noon, and they did. Inevitably, the gravy took longer or something else. It always turned into 2 or 3 o'clock. So from the host's standpoint, I would think you got some stuff to munch on while you wait. Tell me about that, Thomas.
Yeah. I would say, you know, Thanksgiving is one of the few occasions that we gather that's kind of an annual tradition that is not on a weekend. So given that there are people who work on Friday, as you're planning your occasion, you want to make sure that you're not serving dinner so late that people are having to leave very late, especially if they're traveling or driving any sort of distance. So I would say the Thanksgiving dinner really, and this would be throughout North America, regardless of where you are, you really want to make sure that dinner has been served by 6 o'clock at the latest. But I have acquaintances who will serve around 2 or 3. But if it's 7 or 8 o'clock and the bird is finally landing on the table, you've not timed this very well. And my heart goes out to anyone who does a Thanksgiving meal, because timing is everything. But if you're serving too late, this is definitely you're going to have people rushing out right after dinner and skipping dessert. And that's a shame, because you've spent all that time preparing desserts as well, and no one's going to get to enjoy them. So ideal time, I would say 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. I think is probably your ideal window.
It's the gravy that inevitably does you in. It seems like that's always a situation. I want to ask the audience here at 504-260-1870. What time do you plan Thanksgiving dinner, and what time do you actually eat it? I don't know if anybody that has ever eaten Thanksgiving dinner at noon. Do you?
That would be very early. And again, I think the reason you don't do that, you've got to remember, you have gathering time. You have to permit, whether you like it or not, there are going to be guests who arrive late. Sometimes you have people who try to hit one or two homes. Maybe they do have 2 invites and they're trying to get to both places. So I think noon for your meal would be, unless you're doing something very untraditional, maybe you're doing Thanksgiving at a restaurant. And then, sure, you all meet at noon. That would be one thing. But there is just too much happening in that kitchen. The host is like an orchestra conductor. There's a symphony going on in that kitchen. And invariably, there's one section that's not going to be playing with the rest. And you need to give yourself buffer time. Noon, I think, would be way too early.
You're reading ahead here. I don't know if you can see this text line, but somebody texted in, been married 3 years, and every year it's a constant struggle over whose house to go to first, hers or mine. Thoughts, Thomas? How does a married couple navigate 2 sets of parents?
Yeah, that is tricky. I think the first thing is you want to ensure that both sets of hosts who are inviting you feel that their invitation is very much appreciated. And this is where the also-ran, the one that's not getting your presence at their gathering, that we do what we discussed earlier. You send them some sort of a flower arrangement or some kind of a gift in advance to let them know that you very much appreciated the invite and that you look forward to seeing them soon. So it's not just, well, see you next year, but you make some sort of a plan to see them either before the Christmas holidays or after the Christmas holidays, so that people feel like you are not neglecting them. Sometimes it comes down to flipping a coin, a rock, paper, scissors. The more neutral you can make this decision, or maybe you simply alternate 1 year here, 1 year there. But if you're consistently going to one side of the family and neglecting the other side, they're going to feel like they did something wrong, and we certainly don't want to leave that impression.
So what about somebody texted in, we tell people what time we're going to serve, and other people are running late. Other people are texting in saying if they run late, do they tell people to hold dinner? Do you call ahead? At what point does a host or hostess say, that's it, we're serving dinner, whether blank is here or blank is not here?
Oh, yeah. I would not, for a guest to be coming late and saying, please hold dinner until my arrival, are you the king of England? What's going on here?
I think they were saying just the opposite. Do you call ahead of time is what they're saying.
Sure. I see. Yeah, I would say, in this age of everyone texting all the time, I think that what I might do, rather than physically calling, I would text someone, not even the host. I would text someone at the party because the host is going to be, you know, they're going to have their oven mitts on. They're going to be running around. They're going to be answering doors. They're going to be the last thing they have time for is a chit chat with you about the traffic, you know, on Route 80. So I would text someone who you know is a guest at the occasion who can go in on your behalf and provide a little bit of an update. And by all means, if you know that you're going to be arriving after dinner was planned to be served, you say, please, please, please start without me. And you don't get cranky about your leftovers being cold when you finally do arrive.
Well, here's an interesting one. We can answer this when we come back. My husband carves a turkey and my brother can't resist picking at the turkey as he's carving it. And it drives my husband crazy. It can be amazing how these little things can cause the biggest tensions. You can solve that when we come back. Somebody else wants to know, how late do you wait for someone to show up before eating? That depends on whether or not you're carving the turkey, because chances are if you are, you're stuffing some of it in your mouth, and then time's not of the essence. More with Mr. Manners when we come back. You got any Thanksgiving questions? Somebody texts in and said, we try to eat at 1 o'clock, usually eat at 1:15 or 1:30. Somebody said, we've never not eaten at noon, so early risers, I guess. Somebody else said, we try to eat Thanksgiving dinner at 5 o'clock every evening, every Thanksgiving. 9:40, 20 till 10, more when we come back with Mr. Manners. You got questions, 504-260-1870. Somebody else said, really easy, let her win or your road will be very long and hard. Amen to that. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 9:45, quarter till 10. Somebody texted in, make it easy on everybody. Go to nothing and go to Caesars and shoot craps. Tim, what did I tell you about texting the line? Don't do that. Guy near Mr. Manners, that's rude. Tim texting his degenerate gambling plans in. I told him not to do it. Let's talk about the one about, what was it? Oh, about picking at the turkey while somebody's carving it and everything else. One gets angry about that. It's like, it's just a piece of turkey. Let it go. Tell me. You know what I think, Thomas, is that this is not about one carving the turkey or the other picking at it. It's about control or something else going on here. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's that, Tommy. I also think that, you know, the kitchen is a sacred domain, especially at this particular meal. So we, as guests, often have this tendency, we want to be near the host. We like the host. We want to be near the food. So we gravitate to the kitchen. And we unless we're invited into that inner sanctum, we should be staying out. If our help is needed, if somebody wants to ask us, is this too salty, by all means, we enter that domain. But we really should be out mingling with the other guests, not crowding the host in that space. And this goes for if you're bringing something, and hopefully you have, mm-hmm. you're bringing something that doesn't require additional heating when you arrive. Remember, the oven space is going to be at a premium. So walking in and saying, you know, hey, could you pop this in for 20 at 375 is going to completely disrupt what's going on in that kitchen. So whatever you bring, make sure that it can be served at room temperature and does not require any heating, and don't crowd that host in the kitchen. That includes the nibbling.
What about cleaning up afterward? Is the kitchen as sacred then? That just popped into my head. Or should you lend a hand?
There I'd follow the lead of the host. Many hosts would prefer that their guests stay out of the kitchen the entire occasion, either because they have their own way of washing their dishes or you know, arranging their plates. They don't want to have to be searching for cups and knives and forks that were put away in the wrong spot for days afterward. On the other hand, you've got to remember, you're not at a restaurant, so you should be clearing your plate unless, again, the host really insists that you do not and that they've got that covered. But a good host or a good guest is going to clean up after themselves. But if they're shooed out of the kitchen, they should remain out of the kitchen. And that includes the cleanup.
Somebody wants to know about kids table and age on that. What is the proper age to have a kids table or not?
I think it's so nice if you can have everyone at the same table, but, you know, not every home can accommodate that, and certainly not every table can accommodate that. So I think once you're in junior high or going into high school, if you're still sitting at a kid's table with those tiny chairs and your toddler cousins, I think this is really mortifying, and I think it's time to welcome that individual too. So once you're entering adolescence, I think the time is nigh for you to be welcome to the adult table, if at all possible.
Ooh, this is a good one that pops up. Handling of pets with people coming over to eat.
Unless this has been cleared in the same way that you would not bring a plus one.
No, I mean the people that are hosting with the dog.
Oh, they have a dog.
Because sometimes, you know, people are more attached to the dog than the family.
I have a very, very bad cat allergy myself. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend, this was not for Thanksgiving, but I remember going to her home and I was miserable. I mean, I was tearing up, my eyes were watering, I was sneezing. And I said, is there any way that you could put Fluffy in another room? And she said, Fluffy is a member of our family. I can't put her away in a room. So I never went back to that house. It just, I think a host must prioritize the needs of their guests. And you have a pet, whether it's a cat or a dog, who you know is going to be a little bit rambunctious or upsetting the sensibilities of some of your guests, it might be time to think about other arrangements, having the pet out of the way so that you don't have to worry about it and your guests don't either.
Thomas, as you say that, I myself have a severe cat allergy. And as I'm online dating, I see if she says she has cats, there's a cat fancier. Next, I just can't do it. But I just can't do it.
It's a deal breaker.
It's a deal breaker, it is. Somebody texted in about leaving, about the Irish goodbye. For people that don't know what that is, explain that, Thomas.
Sure, and I don't know, the Irish didn't necessarily own this, but somehow they call it the French exit,
right? Same thing?
Yes. The Irish exit, the French exit. So the idea that you simply kind of leave the event, you're almost ghosting the event without actually saying a formal goodbye to everyone at the occasion. I think at Thanksgiving, this is not appropriate. This is something we're still talking about the office party in a bit, but at the office party, sure, the Irish exit is entirely appropriate. But you're calling more attention to the occasion ending, or that perhaps it was not something that you enjoyed very much. If you leave without graciously thanking your host who slaved over that meal, and you just head to the door and you disappear, entirely inappropriate for a Thanksgiving gathering. I would not be happy if I were the host and I had a guest who pulled an Irish exit.
I call it the Tucker exit, because what I hate, making it seem as though, well, I got to go. Oh, well, let's stop everything. Tommy's got to leave. Look out. Yeah. The party ends.
Sure.
How do you gracefully do that? How do you just pull a host aside? Do you say, hey, thanks for having me, I got to run?
Well, we know that the party probably is ending if you're leaving, because you bring a lot.
Well, I don't know about that, but okay. Let's go with that.
But if it's a large gathering, if it's, an open house, New Year's Day gathering where there are 35 people, no, do you need to glad handle each and every guest as you make your exit and people pay their homage to you as you depart? No, of course not. But a small dinner occasion like a Thanksgiving, you really should, because you know what? Someone's going to say, Tommy left, he didn't even say goodbye. And they're going to be offended at a smaller gathering. So if you're 15 or 20 tops, you really should try and say goodbye to everyone before you go. It shouldn't be that difficult.
Somebody texted in about praying before the meal. I would think it's your home. If you want to pray, pray. But if it's not your home, then you can't really. Well, first of all, you can't force anybody to pray. They've tried it and it doesn't work. But what about that, Thomas? The blessing, the grace, the whatever.
I think it's something that we tend not to do, many of us, when we sit down to have a meal. But I think this meal, out of all meals, and it doesn't have to be a formal prayer, but I think expressing thanks and gratitude, that's what this holiday is about. Do it in some fashion.
Thank you, Thomas. I appreciate your time. Thankful for you, my friend. Give us the website again.
Thank you, Tommy. It's MrSpelledOut-Manners.com. Have a happy Thanksgiving to you and all your listenership.
You too, sir. We'll talk to you again soon. Hopefully, we're going to make everybody's Thanksgiving turn out wonderfully happy and nice. Thomas Farley, Mr. Manners, etiquette expert, columnist. We'll talk to Newell Norman when we come back, see what he's got planned for us today on WWL.